Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Hello and welcome to today's version of the Squawker Talker with your host, me, Rory Briggs. And I'm joined today by Ollie Young-Miles over in the corner. How are you doing, Ollie?
Yeah, very well. How are you, Rory?
Not bad, not bad. And making his debut on the Squawker Talker is Harry Edwards. How are you doing, Harry?
Not too bad. Thanks for having me on.
Nice. Now we're going to kick off with Ryan Brewster, Liverpool's Ryan Brewster's second hat-trick in as many games, sending England into the World Cup final at their level. Now, how exciting is that crop of youngsters for England right now?
Yeah, they're looking really good. In the summer they reached the final of the Euros and they were unfortunate not to win that. It's been a great year for English youth teams, and I think the under-17s have really stepped up at this World Cup. They've put in a load of really good performances. And there's a lot of really bright, talented players in there, you know, like Brewster, like Phil Foden, who was exceptional yesterday, and Jadon Sancho, who went home early to play for Dortmund's first team. So yeah, it's really promising, and hopefully they can go on and win the final.
If you had to pick out one as the most exciting, maybe who would it be for you, Ollie, at the moment?
I think Phil Foden is outstanding. I think Brewster got the plaudits yesterday for a hat-trick, and rightly so. They're all very clinical finishes, and he looks a really big prospect. But Phil Foden, I think, is just he looks a little bit like when Wilshere first burst onto the scene. Very similar sort of player, low centre of gravity, moves the ball very well, passes it very well, and he looks like the perfect kind of Pep Guardiola player. So hopefully he'll get a chance in the City first team this season at some point.
Nice one. Well, let's move on to other games from yesterday. The absolute bizarre result that was Tottenham 2, West Ham 3. What was all that about then? Harry, what did you make of that?
I don't know what's going on with Tottenham. Obviously, off the back of a good win over Liverpool, I think it just highlighted the fact that they've not got a plan B. Once Harry Kane's out of the team, there's not much else that they can do. Fernando Llorente's good in the air, but if he doesn't have the support around him or going up against tough defenders, I think he's going to struggle, and Spurs are going to struggle.
Mm. Well, Pochettino said he was so disappointed to go out of the League Cup, the Carabao Cup, this season. This is a trophy that he should be targeting, no, Ollie?
Yeah, you'd think so, but he said beforehand on Monday that Spurs are going for the Premier League and Champions League. He said those are the titles that that teams like Spurs should be targeting. He essentially wrote off the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup in doing so, which I think probably played a part in the result yesterday. First half, Spurs were utterly dominant. West Ham couldn't get near them. But I think second half, they just completely dropped off. They lost their concentration. And perhaps it's the fact that Pochettino doesn't value it is a reason for that. But, I find it weird, his stance towards it, because we've seen before with Jose Mourinho, he's used that competition as a springboard to success, both at Chelsea and Man United. Manuel Pellegrini did the same at Man City as well. And we keep talking about this Spurs team being a great side, and they need to win something. And this would have been a good chance to try and win something early on in the season. But it's not to be.
Well, we'll come on to their game against United at the weekend in a bit. But just on West Ham, they really did turn it around. And they've kind of given the half-time team talk of Bilic as a kind of reason for that. Do you think that second-half performance showed that they are actually still behind Bilic?
Yeah, I think obviously leading up to the game, there was a lot of doubts about his future, with many thinking that the wrong result would have been the end of him. But I think going down to a good team like Spurs, they could have easily crumbled second half. And I don't know what went on in the dressing room, but something clicked for them, and they exposed the weaknesses in Spurs' team. Mm.
How do you think they should line up now on attack? Because there was no sign of Arnautovic, Hernandez, but Andre Ayew was there to step up. And then they'll have Carroll back, and then how does that fit for you? How do you think they're going to manage it?
Well, I think given the way Arnautovic played against Brighton, I think he needs to be dropped for for at least a couple of games, just so that he can get back into the right frame of mind. And it was Gary Neville that said that he thinks he's Ronaldo in his own mind.
Yeah.
And I think everybody knows that he's not. So I think a couple of games on the bench, maybe not even in the squad, will really drill into him that he needs to work harder. He needs to be more of a team player for West Ham.
So a bit of time on the naughty step for Ronaldo. Chelsea 2, Everton 1. Rudiger and Willian's goals sending Chelsea through against a managerless Everton. What did you make of that, Ollie?
Yeah, it was. Chelsea rotated a little bit. They played a few young players in the game, and they did enough. They went 2-0 up, and then Calvert-Lewin scored in the last minute of the game to sort of put a gloss on it for Everton's point of view. But it was a professional job from Chelsea. Willian probably gave his best performance of the season. He's come in for a bit of stick from Chelsea fans, I think, but he got the second goal, and his overall game was quite impressive as well. So it's a good result for Chelsea, particularly because they've been a little bit ropey in recent weeks. I saw the second half against Watford, and they were all over the place for about 15, 20 minutes. Very unlucky to not go behind, and then eventually they sort of managed to turn it around. But they're in the quarterfinals now, and this could be, as we just touched upon, could be a good opportunity for Conte to lay a marker down, because, even though it's ridiculous, people have been questioning whether he's going to last the season at Chelsea. So it's a good result for them, and I expect them to do well in this competition.
Talking about laying the marker down, we also saw Ethan Ampadu, the first player born in 2000 to start for Chelsea. Now, Chelsea, the last proper youth academy product, you'd say, is John Terry. Harry, you know lots about Chelsea, but do you think this is an actual chance that he could make it in? And Conte's obviously had his criticism in the past of not giving youngsters the shout they need.
At the minute, to be honest, I don't see him breaking into the first team. He's been given these opportunities because of injuries. N'Golo Kante's out injured. Bakayoko picked up a knock against Roma, and it was actually a surprise to see Danny Drinkwater start, because there had been reports that although he was back in training, he wasn't ready. And I know it's a Premier League opponent, but it's still in the Carabao Cup. And I think Conte's history, having sold Nathaniel Chalobah in the summer, I can't see why, in such a short space of time, he'd give someone much younger, much more raw, an opportunity when he sold someone who has so many years of professional experience at different levels in different leagues as well, in Chalobah.
What do you make of his qualities so far, Ampadu?
I think last night he was good, but he definitely looked like a 17-year-old playing with men. He wanted to get involved into the game, pointing out, telling players like Rudiger and William what to do, as you'd expect with a young player that just wants to feel part of the team. There were bits missing in his game. Lots of sideways passes, and his attempted long balls weren't completely there. But I think for a 17-year-old, he showed himself up well. But there's still a long way to go, and people shouldn't rush.
Yeah, don't write him off. Now, Man United Spurs, the big game of the weekend. Ollie, Mourinho has had Pochettino's number down for years now. In 6 non-home games against Mourinho, Pochettino has lost all 6 and only scored once. How does he change that this weekend?
Well, it's an interesting game, really, because, last night aside, they come into in different patches of form. Really, United have, after making a storming start to the season, have gone two without winning in the Premier League. They were criticised heavily for the Liverpool game and then lost to Huddersfield, whereas Spurs are off the back of a 4-1 win against Liverpool. So before last night, you would have said Spurs might even be the favourites for that. Now it's a little bit more up in the air. It's a strange one that Pochettino hasn't managed to get a better record against Mourinho. I think in Spain, when he was managing Espanyol, you can't really expect them to take points off Real Madrid. But his record since taking over Spurs against Man United away hasn't been particularly good. The 1-0 defeat there last year was one of their worst performances of the season, probably. So it's going to be interesting to see. It's becoming increasingly difficult to second guess Pochettino. He's changed system so many times this year. He's currently going with a 3-5-2, which has worked very well, but whether that will stand up against United's 4-2-3-1 is going to be an interesting battle to watch. But yeah, it's going to be a strange one. We know it's a big game. Mourinho is very good in big games, but Spurs will fancy their chances as well, I think, of getting something and bouncing back from that West Ham game.
Mm. Well, it was interesting to see Man United knocked back down to earth against Huddersfield, losing 2-1. After that, even people were sort of saying, oh, this is a sign that they're not really title contenders. And even Phil Neville was saying, you know, top four at best. So, you know, is this really a sign that they're not quite there yet? How is this really going to affect their title hopes if they do struggle to get a result from Spurs, Harry?
Well, I think the result against Huddersfield really showed their lack of depth in defence. Once Phil Jones went off injured, obviously Lindelof really struggled, and Huddersfield targeted that. And I think if Spurs do pull off a draw at the weekend, it will put United at least 6 to 8 points behind Manchester City. And if you think of it hypothetically, and if both City and United win all their games, and United win the two Manchester derbies, if City are already 8 points clear, that's still not good enough for them to win the league. And I know it's only October, but I think to be at that stage this early on, already hoping that other teams will get their results for them, I think it's going to be a tough ask for United to build on that.
Well, the one man they've got to stop, obviously, is Harry Kane. But Harry Kane, actually a doubt for this weekend's game. How do you think Spurs will manage without him? What is their plan B then?
Well, yeah, it's a bit of a weird one with Kane, because after the game, I think it was BN Sports reported that he is a doubt for the game. And then there's been conflicting reports today suggesting he had cramp against Liverpool and he might be fit. So if he's half fit, I think Spurs will play him. You know, he's in such good form, and he is the key man in the Spurs side at the moment. So if he is fit at all, they will play him. His record against United isn't great. I think his only goal against them was in the final game at White Hart Lane last year. I think he's got 1-4 in total or something like that. So he will want to prove something against United. He hasn't shown his best against them yet. But if he isn't fit, I think perhaps Son and Llorente as a two. You know, Llorente's sort of been brought into the fold a little bit more recently, playing at the Bernabeu and playing last night. And for the first goal, they actually linked up quite well, Llorente and Son. Obviously, it's completely different to having Kane up front. But, I mean, you know, Llorente has done well in his fleeting appearances so far. So I think he would probably go with those two again. Dele Alli seems to be dropping deeper into midfield. So I think Son will be the sort of pacey outlet and Llorente the hold-up man up top.
So if Kane does make it and he does, you know, grab a winner or something, he does have an outstanding performance, is this, as people have kind of described the Real Madrid game, is it another audition? Or do you think he's not really in his mind at the moment?
I don't think it's in his mind at the moment. It's, you know, for him, his sort of mindset is geared towards scoring as many goals as he can. I think he's just completely focused on Tottenham for this moment in time. You know, talk of transfer, I saw, you know, Spurs have got 220 million valuation on him or something at the moment, so even that's going to be difficult for Man United and Real Madrid to pay. And I just don't think he's really that fussed about leaving Spurs. There's other players I think you'd have question marks over about potentially leaving, maybe Alderweireld, maybe Dele Alli at some point. But with Kane, I get the feeling that he's quite happy at Tottenham. And you know, as long as they're playing as they are at the moment, I think he'll stay.
We shall see what happens this weekend. Now, the next game, can you guess who this is? This is the most goals. This team has scored the most goals so far. 32 joint most chances created, 126, and the fewest conceded, 4. Who be it? It is, of course, Manchester City, the high flyers at the moment. And how can West Brom stop this absolute battering ram of a team?
To be completely blunt,
yeah,
they can't. I think against this City team, what you have to do, you have to starve them of the ball. You need to keep the ball away from Kevin De Bruyne, Raheem Sterling, David Silva, and a Tony Pulis side and West Brom just don't have that in them. They don't have the players, they don't have the ability. And Pulis likes to set up to defend against these teams. he's done it for so many years, and I can't see him changing, which will give City time on the ball, which will give De Bruyne the chances to do what he does best, that will give Aguero and Jesus the opportunity to score goals. And I think Aguero will become City's top scorer this weekend.
Well, I think, as you say, De Bruyne has been sensational recently. I mean, but his form goes beyond that. He now matches Lionel Messi on 69 assists since the start of 2012-2013. Ollie, do you think he's the best player in the division, if not Europe?
Yeah, probably not Europe, but I think he's probably the best in the Premier League this season. Yeah, he had a bit of a slow start. He didn't get a goal or assist in the first three games, but since then, he's been exceptional. He's adapted to that sort of deeper central midfield role brilliantly, and he's just racking up the assists at the moment, and really an incredible assist as well. The pass last week to Sané was brilliant, and against Stoke, he just delivered an absolute masterclass, really, in chance creation and play in the final third. So, yeah, he's outstanding, and I expect him to carry on, you know, his good form against West Brom. As Harry said, they're very defensive. Last week, they were away to Southampton and they showed no signs really of trying to score. And against City, who are much improved defensively, I can see them, you know, probably getting 20% possession and not really doing much with it. So, I expect City to carry on their good form, but Tony Pulis knows how to get a result as well. So, who knows?
Comparing the two, De Bruyne and Kane, who do you think would be the first to the Ballon d'Or?
Well, it usually goes to strikers, doesn't it? It goes to players that score a lot of goals. So Kane, you'd think, potentially has the edge in that sense. De Bruyne is brilliant at what he does. And I think he will probably make it into the World 11 perhaps next year. But in terms of Ballon d'Or, I just think it's given to players that score 30, 40, 50 goals. Cannavaro is probably the last one to win it, who wasn't, you know, a kind of goal-scoring player, and I think that was very much a rarity. Potentially. I mean, I would say he's the best in the Premier League, but, you know, as long as Messi and Ronaldo are going, they're going to keep racking them up, and I think Neymar is probably next in line once they slow down a bit.
Well, on to Liverpool Huddersfield at Anfield. The meeting of two best friends with Jurgen Klopp and David Wagner, the two German coaches. One doing one sort of more optimism about him at the moment. David Wagner's Huddersfield doing very well. You know, just beaten Man United. How do these two teams sort of actually have a similarity? Who's doing the better job? Is there much crossover between the two?
Yeah, there is. There is quite a lot of crossover. I think Wagner is very, you know, he pinpoints Klopp as a big sort of inspiration to him coaching wise, and you can see that with the way Huddersfield press and hound their opponents. It's very similar to Liverpool. One thing I think that does differ, you know, quite starkly is that Huddersfield actually know how to defend. You know, this season they've only conceded 9 goals from 9 games, which for a promoted side that's played good teams already is a pretty good record. And if you consider 4 of those were against Spurs, you know, that's what, 5-8, which is a good record. Zanka Jorgensen looks brilliant at the back alongside Schindler. Whereas Liverpool, you know, as we saw last weekend, are all at sea at the back, and they have been for the past 5 or 6 years, really. Klopp hasn't been able to remedy that issue that the club has had for a long time. They should have signed at least one defender. Their goalkeepers aren't good enough for a team with title aspirations or even top 4 aspirations. I think that's one area that Klopp really needs to sort out, and I think Wagner at the moment has done better at getting the best out of his defensive players and making his team difficult to score against.
So, I mean, Harry, how do you think Huddersfield are going to unsettle Liverpool? Are they going to sort of prey on their weaknesses?
Well, I think if they go at the Liverpool defence the same way they went at Lindelof against United, they'll have a field day, because whether it's Dejan Lovren or Klavan that will play, depending on what Klopp chooses, they'll be nervous, especially after last week against Tottenham. They'll be nervous, and Huddersfield's players can just, if they're just high pressure and barely give the defenders time on the ball and challenge them in the air, it's going to be a struggle for Liverpool. And I wouldn't be surprised if Huddersfield come out with a positive result.
Well, Liverpool do have a pretty poor form against smaller teams in the league. So, I don't think it's going to be much of a surprise if it's not going to go Klopp's way again. But Liverpool's display against Wembley was torn apart by Lovren. Is it kind of Klopp's fault for bringing him off? Was it who's to blame here?
I don't know, because, I mean, Lovren hasn't developed at all since he went to Liverpool. At Southampton, he was very, very good. But I think the difference there was he was getting well coached. Pochettino was coaching him, and we all know that he's, you know, the job he's done at Spurs in making them very difficult to beat, he's bettered the defenders he's had. I don't think you can really say that about Klopp. But, you know, he has improved players at Liverpool, people like Coutinho and Lallana, but I don't think he's improved anyone really defensively. So, I mean, it's partially Lovren's fault. He hasn't kicked on, but I don't think he's had sufficient help by his manager necessarily. I don't think the Liverpool system particularly helps their centre-backs either. You know, they don't really have a defensive midfielder. Henderson sort of sits there, but I wouldn't call him a defensive midfielder as such. He's more of a passer. So it's difficult for them. But, you know, as I said, I think Liverpool, they obviously weren't big after Van Dijk, didn't get him. And they needed to get some defenders in this summer, and they haven't. And I think having conceded 16 goals already, which is, you know, only worsened by five teams in the league, is going to come back to haunt them. And I think they'll probably miss out on the top four because of that.
Do you think it is about the player? It's about the players themselves, their ability. They sort of reach their limit, and Klopp can't take them on another level. Or
I think there is a bit of that. You know, I can't really see Lovren and Matip, being starting defenders for top European clubs. No matter how well they progress, but I think at the same time, Klopp isn't getting the best out of them for whatever reason. So, yeah, it's a tricky one. I think it comes down to both player and manager in this instance. You know, Liverpool haven't been able to defend for ages. It's why they lost the Premier League title a few years ago. The players just haven't, for whatever reason, taken on Klopp's instructions.
Score prediction for that one? Because it could be...
I think Liverpool will probably bounce back, but they won't have it their own way. And I think maybe 2-1.
2-1. Harry, what are you thinking?
I think I'd go 2-1 reverse.
Ooh.
On to a slightly more comfortable fixture, or not. Arsenal-Swansea at the Emirates. It was more like it from Arsenal at the weekend against Everton. I mean, Everton had their own problems. It was not quite the Everton who would have given a bit more fear away in recent seasons. But is it any coincidence that this is the first time Ozil, Sanchez and Lacazette have played together, Harry?
I think I'm surprised it took Wenger so long to play these three. These are Arsenal's, by far, three best players. And at the start of the season, I know Sanchez came back from the Confederations Cup late, and he kept, for some reason, replacing Lacazette with Sanchez or replacing Sanchez with Lacazette. And I don't know why. Yeah. They need time to build an understanding on the pitch. And with Ozil thrown in there, I think, as they showed against Everton already, all three combining for goals, they're gonna do well this season if they keep playing those three in that system, although it was against an average defence to be nice for Everton.
So, how dangerous can this trio go going forwards? Is this a title-winning trio?
I wouldn't say
challenging.
I wouldn't say title-winning, but yeah, they could fire Arsenal to the top four quite comfortably. I think the promising thing for Wenger, I think, is Sanchez was brilliant, but Ozil really sort of thrived having a runner to sort of play off in Lacazette. He created 8 chances last week, which was higher than anyone this week, and it's sort of the Ozil that we've come to expect, creating chances for teammates. And he got his first assist as well against Everton and first goal of the season. So if they can keep him playing like that, it'll be massively important. We all know that Sanchez can turn up and score goals out of nothing. Even when the team's not playing well, but when the team's not playing well and Ozil doesn't play well, so keeping him happy and having Lacazette to sort of play off, I think we'll probably get the best out of him. It's encouraging.
Swansea didn't win last weekend, but Tammy Abraham is a guy in form. He's actually pretty exciting. I think it's a sort of a shame that people were saying, oh, they'd rather have him than Batshuayi, but then Batshuayi turns up and actually and wins it for Chelsea in the end last weekend. But Can Tammy Abraham cause him problems? Is that is he going to kind of become the next bogeyman for Arsenal?
At the minute, I don't think so. I don't think Swansea are suited to him the way they're playing at the minute. I know he's their top scorer and responsible for a high percentage of their goals, but I don't know. His best playing is getting into the box and not tap-ins, but it's his spatial awareness. And for whatever reason, Paul Clement hasn't got the Swansea players working towards that yet. And he's only 20, and he's basically carrying the Swansea team. He's got all their expectations on his shoulders. He did well with Bristol City last season in the Championship, but the Premier League is a big step up for a young player. I know players like Marcus Rashford have done well, but Rashford wasn't the focal point of the team. Whereas in this Swansea City team, Abraham is. And I think if things don't work out well for him, I think Swansea are going to struggle.
Mm. So Ollie, have you sort of got like an idea of Swansea being actual like candidates for an upset here, or is it going to be quite easy sort of plain sailing for Arsenal?
You never really know with Arsenal. It's rarely plain sailing, even at the Emirates. It's the kind of game that they've struggled with before against a team not in particularly good form, battling towards the bottom of the table. But one thing that I think will stand Arsenal in good stead, they're in decent form at the moment, and Swansea are really struggling for goals. If Abraham's not scoring, Swansea don't really look like scoring. So as long as they can keep him quiet, I think Arsenal should be all right. Arsenal at home is
still a little bit dodgy. You saw in the game giving away goals, kind of. Well, the Mourinho one was a kind of exceptional one, but Rooney scoring as well was given too much space, you'd say.
Yeah, well, we've discussed it before on this podcast. It seems bizarre that he's persisting with this back three when they don't really have the personnel for it. Even in front of that back three as well, the centre midfielders, Xhaka and Ramsey, aren't the most disciplined. Look, Swansea. If Swansea can get any top six team, Arsenal are probably the ones you'd think of because of their defensive setup. But I do expect them to have a little bit too much this weekend. The result against Everton should, inspire Arsenal to go on a little bit of a run.
Well, another man of the moment, Marco Silva, coming up in the next one in Watford versus Stoke. Watford looked brilliant against Chelsea. I mean, obviously they didn't get the points they needed in the end, but. This is another sign that this is a manager who is really impressive, good with smaller teams. How long can they hold on to him, do you think?
Well, I think it all depends on what Marco Silva wants, because when he came in, he seems to have built Watford for the future, signing Chalobah, Will Hughes, who unfortunately hasn't played yet for whatever reason.
We actually included him in our piece today on players you've totally forgotten or even still in the Premier League, quite a few from Watford.
Yeah, it's a shame he hasn't played. I was quite looking forward to seeing him.
Yeah. But why do you think that is? Because he's not injured. He's
Decore's been very, very good for them, to be fair. Silva sort of brought him in from the cold. He's been there under two managers. Neither Flores or Mazzarri fancied him, and Silva's brought him in, which I think is a sort of sign of a good manager, when they can spot a player who isn't necessarily flavour of the month and sort of turns them into a key part of their team. Silva's been brilliant for Watford so far. As you said, against Chelsea, they were all over them for the second half. And, he's bought very well. Richarlison looks great. Chalobah was playing very well before he got injured. He's tightened them up defensively, despite having the same defenders pretty much, aside from Kiko. They look very, very complete, Watford, which compared to last season, they're a bit of a shambles. And, he's done a remarkable job.
There's a vacant manager's job at Everton now. Would he suit Everton?
I think he'll see out the season at Watford. He reminds me a lot of Pochettino, actually. And, he's very similar in that he obviously can get the best out of the players he has. He's savvy in the transfer market. Tactically, they have similarities as well in terms of pressing and, going away from home and looking to cause teams problems. So I think he'll be aiming high for his next job. Watford will struggle to hold on to him, I think. I think he'll give it a season at Watford and then go from there. Because if he carries on doing what he's doing, a lot of top clubs will be looking at him.
Well, on to Crystal Palace, West Ham. West Ham, obviously, with a bit of more confidence from the midweek. Palace, I mean, this looked likely to be the game that decided Bilic's future. But that's kind of, you know, he's kept up with that one. So what do you think? Will this performance and result kind of have any real effect if they do lose badly? Is this going to be it again, or are they going to have more confidence in him?
I think if West Ham struggle against Palace, it's going to be the end of Bilic, because the Chelsea performance aside, Palace have been shocking all season. They just lost 4-1 to the Championship side in the Carabao Cup and looked poor then. They offered very little against Newcastle, and I know Zaha's returned, but he couldn't do too much and then was eventually taken off. And given how West Ham played in the second half against Tottenham, they should be beating this Palace side. I think anything apart from a win, even if it's not convincing, anything other than a win could be trouble for Bilic.
Well, on Palace, I mean, what is Roy? I mean, he's brought in a slightly more excitement to the Palace. Certainly the attack, playing Zaha, you know, is actually kind of playing out of his skin now again. But do you think what's going wrong for Roy?
Well, he's sort of inherited a pretty desperate squad that is very low on confidence and form. Obviously, they got that shock result against Chelsea, but last weekend sort of brought them back down with a bump. I think losing that late goal against Newcastle, you know, was really disappointing. And then, obviously, as Harry touched upon, the midweek sort of debacle, which saw Pape Suarez throw his shirt into the crowd and get it thrown back at him, sort of shows where they're at the moment. They're desperate for points. Christian Benteke, I'm not sure if he's fit yet.
They've not been nice for Pape Suarez, considering he's, you know.
I know. Of all the players to sort of do it to, he's probably a little bit unfortunate to be on the receiving end. But it sort of sums it up for Palace, really. They've had a couple of seasons now where they've sort of treaded water and without going down, but they haven't really improved much. And Roy, yeah, he's taken over a tough job, but he did it at Fulham, so who knows? But I think they do need a result this weekend, because otherwise, if they lose again, that's 9 defeats already, and you know they're really up against it to stay up this year.
Well, the next game is the Battle of the South Coasts. This is Brighton versus Southampton. Brighton, you know, both teams won out last time out. Brighton battered West Ham 3-0, while Southampton beat West Brom. So, is this one going to pan out in the kind of meeting of two teams who are on the same kind of level, or is it going to be a complete, you know, mismatch?
No, I think they're going to almost cancel each other out. Brighton, they've had a steady start to life in the Premier League, but they've been very inconsistent. They're struggling to string results together. A win is often followed by a loss or a draw, and Southampton struggled against a defensively sound West Brom team, apart from that moment of brilliance from Bufal. I think of the reason that Puel got sacked last season from Southampton was their attacking problems, and I think they've not really corrected that this season. And I can see them struggling against Brighton. I can see Brighton struggling against them. It's going to be a close affair. If it's not a draw, there's going to be one goal in it.
Well, one man to look out for is Pascal Gross. How good has Gross been? You know, he created the most chances in Bundesliga last season. So, you know, you've got to praise Brighton for their sort of scouting in that sense. What do you think he can do for them?
Yeah, it was a really savvy pickup. A lot of those chances were from set pieces. But I think at Brighton, we've seen him play almost as a number 10, really. And he's been getting the odd goal for them as well. But they, you know, when he's not sort of creating, they haven't really looked too much of a threat. Anthony Konocka hasn't really got going just yet. I think he's got one goal and no assists so far, so they'll be looking for a bit more from him. But you know, it's good news for them that Glenn Murray scored twice at West Ham, because he hadn't scored it in the season before that, so they'll be looking for him a little bit more. But yeah, I mean, Pascal Gross is one of the signings of the summer, and he's one that Southampton will have to look really closely at.
Well, Southampton snagged Sofiane Boufal this year, so his wonder goal obviously sealing it for them last time out. But can he now kick on? Is this going to be his time to actually show his full potential?
Hopefully, because you know, when a player scores a goal like that, I saw a lot of people comparing it to a goal George Weah scored about 20 years ago for Milan. You know, no, it's not an easy goal to score, that running 60 yards and having the composure to finish it off. That, you know, he came with a big reputation from Lille last year and a big price tag. He was their top record signing at the time.
A lot of teams wanted him.
A lot of bigger clubs wanted him, and he didn't really kick on. I think there's been question marks about his attitude and application. You know, his celebration was a little bit bizarre last week when he sort of ran to Pellegrino and sort of shouted in his face. So he's clearly not too happy about something, but he's clearly got talent, I think. You know, in a Southampton side that are struggling to score goals, they need someone with a bit of guile and a bit of craft, and he's clearly got that. So hopefully this goal will give him that sort of impetus to kick on.
Well, now on to Leicester Everton. Claude Puel, good or bad, Harry, as an appointment?
You know, I think he'll do well at Leicester. Like I said, with Southampton, it was the attackers that let him down, but Leicester have the players in Mahrez and Vardy and Okazaki that can make systems work. And I think the most important thing at the minute is that Leicester tighten their defence. This isn't the defence that won them the Premier League two seasons ago. I don't know what's gone wrong, but there was something that neither Ranieri or Shakespeare could get them going again. And I think it's the saying that a good title defence, a good title challenge is built on a good defence. And I know they're not going to be challenging for the title, but I think it still rings true with every system. There's only so long that you can go for the "we're going to score more goals than you" to win games. You have to be strong defensively. And I know Puel got a lot of stick from both Leicester and Southampton fans when it was announced that he was taking over, but I think he's going to do well.
Well, obviously, this is the chance to show that both teams have got a bit of a bounce about them. This is Unsworth's first time in the league to really show that he could possibly take it on for a little bit of time as a caretaker. Do you think he's got the sort of opportunity here, or is he going to be sort of ushered out quite quickly?
Potentially. I think if they win, then he's got a chance. But if they lose, that's two defeats in two. And, you know, the Everton board might start getting a little bit a bit concerned about the club's form and not want to hand it to a managerial novice. But
who would you like to see come in?
Well, there's all sorts of names being flown about. David Moyes was one last week. I'm not sure that will happen. I'd like to see them go for Mikel Arteta. I think the Bleacher Report said that they were linked with him earlier on this week. I think it would be a clever move. I don't think he'll go just yet with City, you know, about to win every trophy under the sun. But obviously he's an Everton legend. He's worked with Guardiola for 15 months, which, you know, is a pretty good start to your coaching career. And I think Everton will be safe. I just think they need to be planning long term. But maybe someone like that with fresh ideas who knows the club well could work out for them. But I think they'll go for an experienced manager beforehand. But yeah, we'll have to see.
Well, Harry, so people like Roberto Mancini have been linked with a few jobs. Is that someone, that kind of level of experience that Everton need, to a degree of volley?
I think that's the level that they should be going for. People like Phil Neville and Ryan Giggs have been linked with the job, but I think...
Are they
linked themselves to the job.
Linked themselves.
I think that would be... David Moyes would be a step backwards, and Giggs and Neville would be...
sideways.
Yeah. It wouldn't do them any good. They yeah. need someone who has the experience, who can set a long-term plan. I think Thomas Tuchel's also been linked to the job.
That would seem like the most obvious. It wouldn't actually, with the level of potential and kind of more vision, I suppose. But also the Dortmund board had a bit of trouble with him during his time. His sort of training methods were questioned and relationship with players as well. So maybe you've got people out there who are... question marks over him as well.
It's an attractive job though, Everton. You know, if we're thinking about them as the seventh best team in England, obviously they're not on form, but they've got the budget to be pushing for the top six. It's a big club, passionate fans, a good stadium, a good squad. You know, it's a imbalanced squad. They've got too many central players. They haven't got enough width in that side, and it's very one paced as well. I think they do need to do a bit in January to add some pace to that side and sort of add to the creative players they've got. They're missing Balassi massively. They haven't it was bizarre they didn't sign a winger this summer, but there's all the tools in place really for someone to make a good success of it. I think part of Koeman's downfall was the fact that he comes across quite aloof, and he reportedly fell out with a few players. We've all seen his treatment of Nias, which seems pretty extreme.
Come back in from the cold Nias.
Well, yeah, he scored the final goal of the Koeman era, which is pretty bizarre. But I think Everton, they're an attractive pool, and they should get a good manager. But Moshiri will be very keen to make sure it's the right appointment after Koeman.
It's interesting to see Koeman's putting some of the blame on the fact that they failed to sign Olivier Giroud actually in the summer as the reason for his sacking. Do you think that was? I mean, that's a fair enough assessment. The fact they didn't quite get a player in that caliber to lead the line, replace Lukaku properly.
I wouldn't say that it would be the reason for his sacking, but it is the reason why they haven't been playing well. And I think that blame has to fall on Koeman. I know he said that Giroud was the one who changed his mind, but if you look at the players that Koeman brought in to replace Lukaku, he brought in an aging Rooney who's been playing the past few seasons as a midfielder, and Sandro Ramirez who hasn't taken to the Premier League well. Vlasic is a attacking midfielder, not a striker.
He's got a bit of a spark though about him. Vlasic.
He's not the out and out goal scorer that they need. Lukaku was always going to be tough to replace, and Rooney has got the goals so far this season, and Calvert-Lewin is looking promising, scoring against Chelsea as well last night. But that was a big problem of their season so far. But I wouldn't say that was the reason for Koeman sacking.
I think Giroud would have been a good signing, but at the same time, he's another slow player who's reaching the sort of the end of his career. He's nearer the end than the start of his career. Let's put it that way. I mean, he can score goals, but he needs pace and creativity around him, and that's something that Everton have lacked this season. So whether that would have been the sort of difference maker, I'm not entirely sure. But they did need a striker, and they didn't get one. So I think they'll have to go out in January and try and remedy that.
Well, 8th meets 7th on Monday night when Burnley host Newcastle. Two teams defying pre-season odds. both managers being linked with other jobs. Sean Dyche again with Everton. What will happen here? Is this going to be another, sort of a notch on Benitez's belt for the season to take Newcastle further up the league, or is Burnley going to be too much? And
I think once again that they're going to cancel each other out. Burnley have been strong defensively, apart from the game against Man City, but everybody's going to look weak against Man City. And Newcastle have been struggling for goals this season. Hosolu really hasn't been working out for them. They've got the creativity with Richie, but they've just not got the person to get on the end of that. Dwight Gale's not really had much of a chance, and Perez hasn't been doing too great either. So I think it'll be a case of bad attack meets strong defence.
Mm. Well, they've had to rely on players like Mikel Moreno, who's had an interview with Guardian this week saying how much of a great teacher Benitez is, and put confidence in him, which he didn't have at Dortmund. Do you think Benitez is doing one of the best jobs in the Premier League right now?
Yeah, definitely, because in the summer I think they spent around 30 million, which in the current climate isn't an awful lot. And they got Moreno in on loan, turned that permanent a couple of weeks ago. He looks like a real steal. So Benitez has got an eye for talent, and he is a good sort of coach. He knows what he's doing. He makes his teams difficult to beat while also ensuring that they are dangerous in attack. And I think Newcastle have sort of overachieved, considering they haven't strengthened their championship team too much. Yeah. They didn't go out and buy sort of top class players that we might have expected that they would do. Exactly.
So
if they get some money in January and they can keep Benitez there, then I mean Newcastle could really become a big club in the Premier League. We've been saying it for years, but he's the kind of manager that they can actually build around long term, I think.
Well, so now around Europe, one player connected to Liverpool, Naby Keita, who will be joining next summer. He's been sent off again. Now he's shown the red card three times now in his last seven games for club and country, which is Guinea. And clearly unsettled at Leipzig, things not going quite well. I mean, should Liverpool be worried to, like, say, kind of cut a deal in January? Do they need to get him out now, basically?
I think it would probably benefit their season. I know they're not doing too badly, but after a slow start. But if players are unsettled, you can't be doing with them in the squad, especially with Leipzig. Bayern Munich aren't looking too great this season. Dortmund are doing well, but this could be Leipzig's chance to really push themselves as title contenders, at least. See, they did well last season, going up to second from promotion, and although Keita was one of their best players alongside Timo Werner and Forsberg, it could be time to cut their losses. And I think from the Liverpool point of view, they could do with Keita now.
Yeah. So I mean, do you think, Ollie, having a player like that, watching your player that you've signed and seeing them get sent off and have problems, probably they're going to have a slight sort of psychological effect from that this season going into next season.
Who?
Keita.
So
if he's struggling this season a little bit, I'm sure you want him to get out.
Yeah, I think so. It makes sense because this deal doesn't really suit anyone. Having Leipzig, we've got a player that they know is leaving. Liverpool could do with a bit of a bonus right now in midfield, and Keita obviously wants to make the move, so it's not really suiting anyone. I wouldn't be surprised if in January, if Liverpool and Leipzig meet again, and Liverpool say, here's 5 million, can we have him now? And Leipzig are like, fine, take him.
Present.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and now Suso, another Liverpool, flop, you'd say. Didn't really get a chance to Liverpool, but now AC Milan's sort of main man he's become. Another goal and assist for him in a 4-1 win over Chievo. All that money in the summer, is it a player who was last year, who's doing business? Just how good is he at the moment?
Yeah, he's brilliant. Milan have had problems this year, sort of bedding in all their new signings, and he's been sort of still the best player. They smashed Chievo 4-1 in midweek, and he got a goal and assist. He's got a goal and assist three times in the league now this season. So, yeah, he's a really clever player. He's a left-footed player playing on the right wing. He cuts in and drifts inside, but he's adding end product to his game all the time, and he's becoming a really, really important player for Milan.
Is that another sign of Liverpool's sort of poor judgment on players?
I think so, yeah, because if you remember, he sort of came in at the same time as Sterling, both as sort of 17, 18, 19-year-olds, young kids, and he looked really good, actually, for a while, and you would have thought he'd suit what Rodgers was trying to do at Liverpool, but for some reason, probably down to Sterling's emergence, he didn't really get a chance and he's been shipped off. But I think it will be one that they regret letting go, because he's still only 23, I think, and he's really turning it on for Milan at the moment, and their sort of Champions League qualifying hopes basically rest on him at the moment. So Liverpool probably got rid of him too soon.
Well, if he was a Barcelona player, he'd probably have a buyback clause and he'd already gone back like Delafeu. Now, Paulo Dybala scored again in Juventus' 4-1 win over newly promoted Spal, or Spal 2013, full name. He's now matched his Serie A goal tally of 11 for last season in 21 fewer matches, and has more free kick goals, 7, than anyone else since 15-16. Is this the year he becomes world class, Harry? Is this Paulo's year?
I think he's on his way. He seems to have finally adapted to the role of playing second striker. At Palermo, he was so used to being the main striker and the focal point for all the goals. But Juventus, he's been playing behind the likes of Mandzukic and Higuain, and he struggled to truly make the impact that he's making now. And I think the fact that he's outscoring Higuain this season and his top scorer in Serie A, I think it just goes to show that he has adapted. But at the same time, there's still a lot more for him to do. He's struggling internationally. He hasn't got the partnership with Messi. A lot of people say that's because the similar players, almost too similar. And I think nowadays, players need to be judged as world class at both club and country level. You hear a lot of people saying that someone like Messi isn't truly the best player in the world ever until he leads Argentina to World Cup victory, like Maradona did. And I'm not saying that Dybala is ever going to be able to do that, but he needs to at least get on the level to to really spearhead
have a big summer. Yeah.
Yeah.
Would we agree, Ollie? Is that Paolo? Do you think people kind of slightly don't quite get Dybala yet? They don't really know about him compared to all the other big players in Europe right now.
Perhaps, but you know, in the Champions League last year, he had really big moments. Obviously, in the final, he didn't do much, but in the run-up to that, he was really key for Juventus, scoring big goals against Barcelona. But I think the interesting thing for him this year is the fact he's scoring so many more goals. He's really stepped up in that regard. And he's one of the best players to watch, I think, in Europe. You know, he's so exciting to watch. His dribbling is phenomenal. He's very quick across the ground, but technically he's brilliant. He's got a wonderful left foot. And he's becoming Juventus' talisman this year. And, you know, if they are to reach the European Cup final again, I think he will have had a big say in it. So he is getting to that level, I think. He's a potential player for maybe a Ballon d'Or in the future, I think.
Nice one. Well, I'm afraid that's all we got time for today. And thank you very much to my guest, Harry Edwards.
Thank you.
Obviously. Holly as well. Thank you very much.
Cheers.
We shall be back next week. And don't forget to subscribe, because you will never able to miss another one again. So, yes, thank you very much. And enjoy the weekend's games. And we'll be here right back again to review them, see what happened, and then talk about another weekend. Anyway, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.